Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of Heaven. And we're going to talk about a lot of things, but I'm going to kind of start a series on Corinthians, and which is about the first epistle of St. Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians. And when I began studying the Bible in more interest and or earnestness, and beginning my at a small young age of 13, I entered the seminary. And went in there to learn how to serve God, follow a calling to serve God, and discovered that the people I went to didn't really know what that meant for the most part. And but I had to read in front of the entire seminary almost the first week. I don't know why I got chosen the first week, but we would read during meals and from the Bible, and I was to read a passage from the first epistle of St. Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians, and I was from Texas, had a very thick accent, very thick Tex accent. I didn't hear it. I didn't know I had an accent. I talked like everybody talked where I came from, and I had heard TV, which has the so-called American accent. You don't hear a lot of accents. There's a certain way you talk on TV, news reporters, everybody has that way of speaking. Dan Rather was actually a Texas boy from Texas, a newsman, a weatherman at one time in Texas. And he didn't have the thick Texas accent because you can't have that and get into the national media, generally speaking. Occasionally you'll see that around, but not very often. And so anyway, I got up there and I could hear what everybody else sounded like. It sounded normal, but I was speaking with this thick southern drawl. And of course, to me, when I read it, the first epistle, St. Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians, came out more like that than what they were used to hearing. And they took a chuckle at the sound of this Texas boy speaking. And became known as Tex in the seminary for a long time. People didn't even know what my real name was half the time. All they knew me by is Tex. And eventually I lost the accent. It comes back around midnight sometimes. But the point was, is I could not hear the accent. Even when I went back to the table and asked everybody what was so funny, and they imitated the Texas accent, I couldn't hear it. I thought they were just talking normal. And it took me a while to train my ear to hear the difference between the southern drawl and the way everybody else spoke. And my kids all joke about the fact that when they grew up, the only TV they ever saw was occasionally OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting. And because we have no other reception out here, but there was a translator nearby, so they could see some of the public broadcast station occasionally on a TV that somebody gave us. And people would ask where they were from because they had an unusual accent, because their response was, well, my father's from Texas and my mother's from Minnesota. And I grew up watching OPB, which is mostly English programs that they put on cheap. So this idea of they learned to hear all the different accents. And that's one of the problems, is there's more than just accents to listen to when people talk and talk about things. We have so many preconceived notions, so many ways in which we hear things, that when you talk about things like church, the Bible, you just mention those words to people, And they're going to, their brain is going to slip into a way of thinking about those topics, religion. And that distorts what they're going to hear because of that preconceived notion, that way of thinking about religion, about church, about God, about the Bible. And so, to break you of those habitual ruts that your brain falls into is a very difficult task. I mean, we have to come with truckloads of gravel to fill in the ruts. And that gravel has to be solid. It can't be powdery dust. It has to be solid. So there are 700 footnotes in the books that I've written. I just, last day or so, I came to my attention that somebody had sent a donation into the church, and I went back and eventually found that. And down in, way in the bottom, there's a little note to call him. Didn't include his telephone number, just call him. I have talked to him on the phone. I've never called him before. I don't really have his number. It might be somewhere in a database somewhere that he sent me, but he didn't send it in the email that he sent, so I don't know how to call him. Now, we created a network years ago, and everybody should join that network, and it's called the Network or the Living Network. You can do it by going to Preparing You or going to hisholychurch.org, and you get in contact with people in your local area, and there are people in your local area who have volunteered to be contact ministers, and if you have a question, you put it to them, they will try to get the answer. I get over 1,000 emails a day. I don't have time to read them. I get calls out of the blue. I get calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they're amazed that I answer the phone. I don't have a secretary to answer the phone for me. I can't afford one. You see, because we're preaching the truth, and the truth doesn't pay. It's not a very, you know, if I was tickling ears like most of the ministers out there, telling you you're saved, you don't have to do anything, you don't have to make straight the way of the Lord, you don't have to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness, you don't have to repent, you just say you love Jesus and you're saved. I could probably make millions of dollars. We could have altar calls, everybody get really emotional, get you all worked up, get emotional, and you think that the Holy Spirit is saving you. And you get a solace in that, kind of a euphoria comes in that. I've seen the people coming back from that with glassy eyes, and brain dead. They've just created a rut of thinking that is really hard to get them out of. They think, you know, I'm saved because I accepted Jesus. I can even give you the date that I did it. And I have to come along and say, well, yeah, I don't think so. Because I don't see the fruits of salvation. I don't see the fruits of Christ living in you. As a matter of fact, I see a zombie, a dead person walking around, not even knowing how far away from Christ they really are. And of course, the same was true of the Pharisees, how far away from Moses they really were. They thought they knew Moses. But Jesus says, if you knew Moses, you'd know me. But you don't know me. You even want to kill me. And the truth is, if Christ was here talking to most of these ministers out there, I don't know if it's most, but many of these ministers out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was most of the ministers out there, telling them where they went wrong, they would want to kill him too. They certainly wouldn't want to support his ministry. You'd find strange people here and there. You know, the wife of some treasurer who wanted to support his, you know, the treasurer of the king who wanted to support his ministry. That's what Jesus had, you know. The granddaughter of Tiberius. Roman centurions. 5-time divorcee Samaritan women. The fishermen. Very few scholars wanted to support and follow the ways of Christ. The straight way. You see, that's repenting requires that you go the straight way. Most Christians do not even know the ways of Christ. Now, I'm throwing that out, and I'll use that word, most. So how do you get them back on the straight way? How do you turn them around so that they can now see it? Well, the fact is it's not just an intellectual thing. That you have to change the way you hear things. You have to change your understanding of words. I can't even communicate with you if you think religion is about what you think about God. If you think that's what religion is, then when I say religion, you don't understand what I'm talking about. When I say church, you don't know what I mean. When I say Corbin, you don't know what that word meant back then. You don't know what the word mammon meant back then. So I have to change your vocabulary. Now, I'm not changing the meaning of words. I'm changing what you think those words mean to back to what they actually meant at the time of Jesus Christ. Because that's the meaning you want. If you're going to, somebody just said, I've read the Bible from, I think, Ezekiel to Matthew or something like that. Yeah, but you didn't necessarily understand it. I mean, you can get these computers to read books now. They'll sit there in an automaton kind of voice and read a book to you. They don't understand it. They don't understand what it's about. How do you know when somebody begins to understand it? Because you will see them change. You'll see different fruits coming from their life. And that's what I see when I read, you know, Paul in Corinthians. But in order to do that, I have to go back and understand, who are the Corinthians? What was going on in Corinth? How had Corinth and the Corinthians changed their way of doing things from, say, the days of the Peloponnesian Wars? What were they doing in the days of the Peloponnesian Wars that made them different from Athens, from Sparta, from the other places that were in Greece? How were they operating as a society? People study history, you know, dates of battles and who was president. What was going on in society itself? What were the conflicts? Not just the headlines, but the actual day-to-day. What was important to the people? Some of the time, it was the economy, stupid. You know, we see that modern political rhetoric. It's the economy, stupid. Because economy affects the way in which you take care of your family and how you can take care of your family. Somebody just wrote on Facebook and was talking about Denmark. You know, they had free this and free that and free healthcare and all this free stuff. And, you know, they also have everybody born in Denmark. It starts out $42,000 in debt. Most of the people will pay 63% income tax. It has the largest bureaucracy per capita than any other country. More people on government payroll than any other country. They got a lot of stuff for free, but their people are going into debt. National debt, more and more rapidly. Now, they actually have a policy where they want to pay off that debt. But, you know, one of the problems with Denmark, and it recently struck them, is that they don't actually produce anything. You know, tulips. But mostly Denmark depends upon transportation services in order to produce money. Now, I mean, there's a lot of great things about Denmark, and we've had people staying with us from Denmark. There's a picture, you know, my son's like 6'5" or 6'6". He has a friend who's like 6'8". And then he has another friend from Denmark who was here, and they were all standing next to each other. My son looked like a golden midget. Because that guy's like 7 foot and well-proportioned, big guy. They are the tallest people in Europe, the Danes. Big, tall, good-looking people. One of the things, they've made taking drugs like marijuana uncool. It's absolutely legal in that country, but most of the people don't bother with it. They don't, it's not any big deal. They actually look down on people who come there to smoke dope because they've adjusted in their culture away from such addictions. But they also have a lot of other problems. But like I say, all those free things that somebody was bragging about, thinking was so great, it's plummeting them in an unpayable debt. Because when there's an economy slowdown in Europe, which there may be another one here coming, looming, you know, with the Greece issue and the Euro issue and all these things, goods don't get transported. Goods don't get transported. Danes don't make money. And so the entire economy is dependent upon the transportation of things through their country. They built this huge infrastructure by going into debt. You know, I mean, you can see some of the places in Europe, you know, they have barges going down rivers that actually pass over other rivers. Yeah, they actually have bridges bridging rivers across valleys. And the reason why is they put these huge barges in. They're into transportation. They don't have the semi-truck way. They move things by boats through these dikes. But anyway, the point is that the structure of your environment and the way in which you operate will change the way you think. It will create ruts of thinking in your mind where you will go a particular way because the way you are going is of a particular design. Christ came to teach you a way. They actually call Christianity the way. Paul refers to it as operating according to the perfect law of liberty. This is what the way was. This is what John the Baptist was talking about. Why does John the Baptist say if you have two coats and your neighbor has none, share, do the same in meats? Because at that time in history, and for about 50 to 100 years before, countries had begun setting up systems of benefaction, benefits, for the needy of their society that were free, or so they labeled it. Free bread. It's not going to cost you anything. You just get free. You're hungry, we got free bread if you're poor. And they actually included cheese and wine and sometimes just money. And sometimes you get tokens to go to the games, you know, entertainment. Free bread and circuses. Coming to you by the government for free. This is changing the way that society was operating. The way that society was thinking. First thing they had to do is get rid of the idea that there's anything wrong with coveting your neighbor's goods. And they start with the rich. The rich make lots of money, and they're rich, so they can afford to help society. So let's make them do it. Let's pass a law that the rich are taxed. You know, when they first instituted income tax, only the top 10% richest people in the United States paid any income tax whatsoever. Top 10%. Everybody else, I mean, you had to make $10,000 in a year to have to pay any income tax when it was first instituted in the United States on citizens. And that was actually through, you had to be a fiduciary of a corporation in order to even be taxed, because it originally was a corporate excise tax. Only the top 10% wealthiest people in the United States had to pay any income tax. And now you have some of the top 10% of the wealthiest people in the United States pay no taxes whatsoever. You know, like was it Rockefeller made $360 million, paid no income tax. How did that come about? Because you haven't been following the way of Christ. You've been told that, oh, just love Jesus. But you don't have to do what he said. You don't have to even understand what he said. And see, in Corinthians, were starting to go that same way. They had set up a central treasury that would receive the contributions of the people that were imposed upon them by taxes. And that would take care of the needy of their society. And Paul comes along, and Paul was famous. Paul was wealthy. He comes from a wealthy, his stepfather was a wealthy Roman family. Historically, an amazing family. And so Paul comes along and he's talking to the head treasurer of Corinth, saying, hey, you guys ought to go back the way you used to do it back in the days of the Peloponnesian Wars. Support the needy of your society by free will offerings according to the perfect law of liberty. And people got upset. And they started beating some of the people who were listening to Paul. There were riots. Because they were threatening to take away their social security, their social welfare. Now, you didn't think about it that way. But that's what was going on back then. And so once you start understanding what was happening, what the Corinthians were all about way back when, they actually had the Athens come to them and wanted to build a wall for them. The Athenians wanted to build a wall and offered to loan them money, kind of like a World Bank government loan to build this wall to protect their city. And they refused. They are their walls. It's the bonding of the society, taking care of one another, caring about one another, that was going to keep them safe, because nobody would abandon their brothers. And they were brothers because of the way in which their society was structured. Today, in the world, every society has moved away from that basic structure of taking care of one another, caring about one another, caring about your neighbor enough to show up if there was a hue and cry or need in your community to help him, to protect his rights because you cared about his rights as much as you cared about your own. You've altered the way in which you operate your society, and it has altered you. And then I come along, is a voice in the wilderness saying, make straight the way of the Lord. Except you don't know the way of the Lord. So we have to go back and study these things. So we're going to talk a lot about the different parameters of history that were going on at that time. We're going to set the scene for you, and we're going to go back and reference that over and over again on this series on Corinthians. And we're going to see if we can make sense out of the first epistle of St. Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians by finding out who Paul was, who Sosthenes was, and who the Corinthians were, and what was going on at the church in Corinth that made this conflict. And we'll talk about that when we return to Keys of the Kingdom. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about Corinth and the first epistle of St. Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians. And we're trying to find out what was Paul really talking about. Well, in order to find out what he was talking about, we need to know who Paul was and who the Corinthians were and understand what was going on in history at that particular time. And it's quite a bit different than what you're taught, because you all go to those free schools, or are taught by people who went to free schools, or by maybe church schools or private schools, and they're all heavily influenced. This influence has been going on for decades, even centuries, to try to get you to have a certain view of history. And this is one of the things that I discovered when I went back and started looking at the meaning of words and the meaning of words at different times in history. Because, you know, like the word religion 200 years ago was defined in America as how you performed your duty to God and your fellow man. How you took care of the needy of society. If you go back to James, that's how he defines pure religion, to take care of the needy of society, unspotted by the world. And the word for world there means constitutional order or system of government. So you were to take care of the needy without the assistance of government, or as Jesus puts it, benefactors who exercise authority one over the other. He said you were not to be like the governments of the Gentile, the princes, the kings, the ministers of the Gentiles, the government ones, the ones who exercise authority. You were to take care of one another by serving one another. This was going to be the way. If that's not your way now, you're not following Christ. If you're not following Christ, you're not a Christian. If we're going to define the word Christian as someone who follows Christ, who seeks to keep his commandments, who will not covet his neighbor's goods, so therefore he's not going to send his kids to public school. He's going to do everything he can to prevent having to send his kids to public school, because that would be coveting your neighbor's goods. That would be depending upon men who exercise authority, forcing your neighbor to contribute to your welfare, to, you know, your free school, your free healthcare, your free whatever it is that you want for free. It isn't for free. It is provided because somebody who exercises authority takes away from your neighbor. If that's the way you've gone, you're not going the way of Christ. You're going in a different direction, sometimes in an opposite direction of where Christ said to go. So that means you're not following Christ. You're actually going against where Christ wants you to go. So you're not a Christian. You say you're a Christian. You say you believe in Jesus, but you're just taking his name in vain, because you're not actually a doer of his word. Wow. Awful lot of people are not doers of the word. They're doing something the opposite of the word. And they're actually promoting the idea that it's okay to take away from your neighbor to get those free things that you want, those benefits that you want. It's okay to do that. It's not morally wrong to desire to have benefits at the expense of your neighbor. That's what they're teaching you. And they've convinced you that that's okay. Those are the prophets of the beast. Now, you've already got the mark of the beast, whatever country you're in. There's almost nobody who isn't given that within 5 days of their birth anymore. You're given the mark. And without that mark, you can't get into the marketplace. You can't get a job. You can't get ID. You can't get a business license. You can't get a bank account. You can't get a passport, because you don't have the mark of the beast. You can't hardly survive. And why do I say the mark of the beast? Well, that's your social security number, your national insurance number, all these things that you have to get those benefits of the beast. You know, to take that, in order to take a bite out of your neighbor, to take from your neighbor through the benefactors who exercise authority, you gotta have the number. You can't have the benefit without the number. And now you can memorize a number in your head, or you can carry the card around in your hand. But you've got to have the number, or you, and you know, in the United States, it's Title 42, Section 666 that says that. And you don't think you have the mark of the beast? You do. Are you condemned to hell? No. But the prophets of the beast, the The ones that are convincing you that it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods, those guys are in a lot of trouble. They need serious, serious repenting. You need to repent. You need to turn around and start taking care of the needy of your society through faith, hope, and charity. And you can join one of the congregations or form one of the congregations that were teaching people how the first century church was walking in the world. If you were actually doing what Christ said to do, if your church was actually teaching you to do what Christ said to do, you would be exempt from Obamacare in the United States. Right now, you'd be exempt. And if all the people said that they were Christians, were actually doing what Christ said, they would be exempt from Social Security. And for the most part, they'd probably be exempt from most income taxes. But they haven't been doing that. So they've become a surety for the debt. And like all those people in Denmark that are born, $42,000, and that's actually old figures. It's probably higher now. Most of these debts don't go down, they go up. And you know, that I think those figures are actually before 2008, and we know there was this huge crunch in 2008 that has sent a ripple effect through trade in, you know, Europe, and therefore it probably put the squeeze on Denmark. Because, like I said, they're in that transportation. But you can go to Norway, you can go to Sweden, you can go to France. You know, I mean, they got like 75% income tax. And, you know, I just put up a thing on the website, Universal Service, which is actually taken from an article, Not My Tea Party. And somebody named Ken Crow had wrote an article, Should America Bring Back Forced National Service or the Draft? And when Bozzo had mentioned this in his video, We the People Stimulus Package, where he dressed up like Thomas Paine and supposedly was, you know, giving the rah-rah speeches, he talked and called it universal service. And that meant that, you know, everybody, every young person would be drafted to work for the government at not just military, but community projects, both men and women. They would be drafted for a period of, you know, 2 years or several years where they had to provide services for the government. They'd get some sort of pay, but they would be drafted. They would be, you know, and the funny thing is that during this whole thing, and I have a video up, if you go to preparing you, you can look up universal service, and the video is linked on there. But Bozzo, who's the actor who is playing this Thomas Paine character, is talking about unrepresentative representatives, and then he wants to bring back universal service, which allows these unrepresentative representatives to tell your sons and daughters what they're going to do this morning. And he's talking about bringing back universal service. Bring it back from where? Egypt? When we were in bondage in Egypt? Because that's not what America was all about. But anyway, this was what the dispute was about in places like Corinth, in Rome, in Ephesus. Because all of the Pax Romana was going this other way, this socialist way, where you get these free bread and circuses, these benefits for free, at the expense of your neighbor, provided to you by men who call themselves benefactors, but actually, they're not benefactors because they're not taking the money out of their pockets. As a matter of fact, they're often padding their pockets. They're taking money out of your neighbor's pockets. And we could go on and give you hundreds of examples how this works. And we probably will before we're done. But we don't want to get too far from this, or we'll never understand the first epistle of St. Paul to the Corinthians. And there's a second epistle, so we have to get to that one too. But anyway, the first centurion's written as 1 Corinthians, or the 1 Corinthians epistle. It's the seventh book of the New Testament, and the Apostle Paul, who is an interesting character in himself that most people do not understand. His mother had been married to a Benjamite who died. He was born in Cilicia, which was one of the free republics, not completely subjugated to Rome. It was allowed its own self-government in parts of Tarsus. But when his father died, she married another guy, Pudentia, who was this famous Roman wealthy family, and who had a son who was Paul's half-brother, who had a son also, and eventually married into a British family. Caradoc was his name. He actually goes by Krakatus. And there's several different ways that they pronounce his name, but he married the daughter of this king in Great Britain, and her name was Gladys, but eventually was given the name of Claudia by the Emperor of Rome, who was so impressed by her that he adopted her, even though her father was still alive. He adopted her and named her Claudia, so she was known as Claudia, and she's mentioned in the Bible. And she had two daughters, and we talk about all this in a page on Paul the Apostle, and we go through his family lineage and who these people are. These were very famous, very powerful people, very interesting people, and you even find stones with their names on them in Great Britain, because they had started a number of charitable projects in Great Britain that helped with the needy. And there was a lot of needy because of the corruption of some of the kings of Great Britain. And who were they corrupted by? They were corrupted by the Romans, moneylenders, who came in and lent them money based on the fact that they were able to tax the people, certain activities of the people, and so they had this kind of guaranteed income, and so they borrowed and lived more opulently. They had all this opulence and fancy stuff that was coming in from the Romans, and so they borrowed money to build it for themselves and taxed the people in order to pay back these loans. It's kind of like what the World Bank does today in many of these underdeveloped countries. They go in and loan them money to build infrastructure, and then in order to pay that money back, they end up having to turn over mineral rights to corporations who come in and mine the heck out of those countries and end up suppressing the people. And they end up with leaders that are extremely wealthy and people who are extremely poor. And this is exactly what was happening in Rome and in Great Britain when the Romans came ashore. And the Pudens, which was this prominent Roman family related to Paul, were seeing that, no, we have to get back to the ways of the Republic, which meant that we take care of the needy of our society with free will offerings. We don't borrow money against the future. And once you start understanding things like the Sabbath is all about not borrowing funds against the future, where your children will have to pay back what you borrowed. That's what the Sabbath is all about. You work 6 days, then you take your day of rest. You do not borrow against the future. That's what the Sabbath is about. You think it's about Saturday or Sunday? That's another strong delusion. You have to repent of that thinking. Get out of that rut. Now, in a couple of previous shows, and I put articles up about riding of backwards bicycles, where somebody welds a bike together so that when you turn the handle to the right, the wheel goes to the left. And when you turn it to the left, it goes to the right. And it's impossible for somebody who has only learned to ride a regular bike to ride that backwards bike. It takes sometimes months to learn to ride the bike, because you'll just fall over every time you try to ride, because it's ingrained in your brain to turn right when you need that wheel to go right and to turn left when you need to go. And so if you were to learn to ride a bicycle that was what they called this backwards bike, which you turn right and it goes left and left goes right, you would not be able to ride a regular bike. If we put you on a regular bike, you would crash every time. If you had learned on a backwards bike, you could not ride a regular bike. You would have to practice and practice and practice again, maybe for months, to learn how to ride a regular bike, because you've already put the grooves in your brain that to turn right when you want to go left and left when you want to go right. And you can't change that easily. This is why it says to train your children yourself. Teach your children yourself so that when they grow up, it will be difficult to go the wrong way. They can learn to go the wrong way, but it will be difficult. See, and you've all learned to ride the backwards bike. You've all learned that if you need something, go to men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority, and get your free bread, your free health care, your free education. And that's good. You've all been taught that. It's hard to get your brain out of that. And when Paul went to Corinth, he was trying to get their brain out of that rut. He said, no, you want to take care of the needy through the perfect law of liberty. And like what James calls pure religion. And to provide for one another out of faith, hope, and charity. Not using force, like John the Baptist said. You know, share. And you should create a network, like Moses showed us how to do, where we gather together in 10 family congregations and we help one another in that congregation. But that congregation is also connected in a network with other congregations. And that's what Paul was teaching them. And they rioted and they wanted to beat him. Because they said, we don't want you to touch our welfare, our social security. And he was talking to people that were in charge of that, and they were liking what Paul said. Now, I talk about it all the time. Do you like to hear it? That if you're dependent upon Social Security, you're not dependent upon Christ or Christ's way. If you say, well, I'll never depend on Social Security, I don't want to pay into it or anything, but you're not paying into a daily ministration based on faith, hope, and charity, you're not going Christ's way. If you're not taking care of the needy of your society, your congregation of churches, you're not following Christ. You're actually either abandoning Christ or going against Christ. And this is what the conflict of Christianity was all about. We have an article up. You can go look it up, Christian conflict. This is why they were being burnt at the stake, jealousy and envy. Because they threaten their way, which was not the way of Christ. Because of Paul's epistles and travels, he is generally considered one of the most important figures of the apostolic age. This is also because his epistles survived. Other guys who wrote epistles, they didn't all survive. Some of the clearer stuff was squelched out around 300 and 400 A.D., and then certainly during the Inquisition, so that you would never read them. So, and then those that you did read, like Paul, they needed to distort and distract you from what Paul was really saying, because then you might figure out real Christianity, and they would have to start up another Inquisition and start killing you off again. And they were really concerned about the Protestant Reformation, but then so many of them began to, most of the people today are not doing what early Baptists did. Most of the Baptists today do not do what the early Baptists did. They don't do, the Quakers aren't doing what the early Quakers did. Same with the Lutherans. They've been distracted by this new definition of religion, which is no longer how you perform your duty to God and your fellow man, but has become what you think about God, or eschatologies, or hermeneutics, or interpretations. And we're going to get heavily into that eventually here, just so you can see how you've all become heretics. And of course, you're going to think I'm the heretic, but that's because you've been riding your bike backwards. When you needed something, you looked to benefactors who exercised authority to take it away from your neighbor. That's the reverse of the way Christ said to be. Christ said is not to be so with you, but it is. It is so with you. You want something, you pray to benefactors who exercise authority. And yet you tell me you are following Christ. You're not. So this important figure of Paul, his own conversion, he was probably in his mid-50s. But he ended up founding a number of churches in Asia Minor and Europe. Paul even, he used his status, which was this high-ranking status of Romeos, not a Roman citizen, Romeos, whole. This Jew from Cilicia, born free. And we, in our series on Paul, we explain how he was not a Roman citizen. Anyone who was a centurion, signed up for 20 years of service, you were automatically a Roman citizen. But the head of the cohort, this is the head guy, he signed up for about 18 years. He says, "Are you Romeos?" to Paul. And he says, "I was born that way." But this guy, who's the head of the cohort, says, "I had to pay a great sum for this freedom of Romeos." Well, he automatically got Roman citizenship as a member of the, you know, a centurion. He didn't have to pay anything to get that. He signed up to be a centurion and an officer at that. But to be Romeos, that's something more. And Paul was Romeos from birth because his father was Romeos. So you have to understand what these things are. You know, people get, they have such a shallow view of the gospel. They're easily deceived. Anyway, Clemens, who was one of the third bishops of Rome, which is a deceptive statement in itself, because bishops were, there were all kinds of bishops in Rome. Even Linus, that Gladys, that Claudia, her brother was a bishop in Rome, and he was from Britain, son of a king from Britain. Well, he's also son of a Roman, because, you know, but anyway, we'll get into that later. But, the part of the Prudentia family. But anyway, you can go to the deal on Paul and read about that. But Clemens was talking about St. Paul came to Britain and preached in the extremity of the West. So Paul was actually even in Britain preaching, according to Clemens, the third bishop of Rome. Well, we're going to talk more about exactly what Paul was doing in Corinth when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.